ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You ever watch the news and think, whoa, this seems...
unprecedented?
Unprecedented.
It's unprecedented.
This has never happened before. This is unprecedented.
I'm Matt Bevan, and my show, if you're listening, is about finding times that what's happening now has happened before and figuring out what we can learn from it. Learning from history. I mean, who could imagine? New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
When Luke Bateman appeared before a gambling inquiry last week, he shifted the dial. For years, Anthony Albanese has stood firm on just how far he's willing to go on gambling laws. But after the former NRL player turned influencer's compelling evidence, PM looks ready to go further. Today, Chief Digital Political Correspondent Claire Armstrong on how he's been convinced. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Claire, last week, Luke Bateman, a former NRL player who survived a gambling addiction, he appeared before a Senate inquiry. And, you know, he has told his story on a few occasions now, but this testimony, it really did cause a stir, didn't it? It was very powerful.
It's really difficult for me, you know, it destroyed my life for many years. But it also destroyed the lives of the people who love me as well. You know, I was stealing money from my own mother to fund my gambling addiction.
Yeah, look, Luke's evidence in particular, I think, really laid out what many have been trying to explain, which is not just that gambling it can be harmful, but that there are examples of the industry really going above and beyond to foster relationships, to build that kind of connection between people who clearly on paper look to be problem gamblers who are spending and losing tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
They identify you as vulnerable and then they exploit that vulnerability. You know, there were many, many times where my gambling would have been extremely erratic, extremely harmful, turning over hundreds of thousands of dollars in a single day on hundreds of races. And never once was welfare brought in.
And his evidence about building this relationship with the VIP account managers who were assigned to essentially kind of wine and dine him and make sure that he was, you know, happy with his gambling activities had gone so far into essentially something illegal, which was to offer to arrange him access to drugs.
There were times where I would be flown interstate and taken to, you know, race days, put in marquees with alcohol and food provided all day, things like that. But also before getting there, your VIP manager would offer you, go, hey, mate, what drugs do you want? Do you want a couple of bags for this weekend? We'll organise that for you. We'll have that ready for you when you get here. I mean, the inducements really destroyed my life because that's what kept you coming back.
So this goes to inducements. So the allegation is that the agencies, once they know someone is hooked, they kind of treat them like a VIP. But of course, at the inquiry, the betting agencies denied this. Representatives from Sportsbet, from Tabcorp, they told the inquiry there's just no evidence of that.
Yeah, so the denials from Sportsbet and Tab related to a separate allegation made under privilege by Tim Costello, who is a Gambling Alliance reform advocate. And he alleged that a person he'd been talking to had been offered similar incentives like the ones that Luke talked about.
He was flown to events from the Gold Coast to Melbourne. He was put up. He was given escorts. He was asked what drugs you like.
We have zero evidence of the allegations made by Reverend Costello yesterday. We have no tolerance for that kind of deplorable conduct.
These claims do not in any way form part of Tabcorp's customer offering.
And Tabcorp has zero tolerance for this behaviour.
I think what's important to sort of understand in all of this is when we talk about legislating against inducements, which is what the Greens and the Coalition and others are pushing for, they're talking about something that can be, yes, a very high-level thing like offered race day tickets or tickets to the footy in a nice exclusive box. That is sort of at the upper end of how some of these big high rollers are sometimes managed. But it can trickle all the way down to something as basic as, you know, the day before a big footy match, someone getting a text saying, hey, big day tomorrow, if you deposit $50 into your betting account, we will match that, or we'll match it by 50%.
Okay, and then just to note, a few days after this hearing, Luke confirmed that he had actually himself worked for a New South Wales bookmaker that was handing out inducements.
Yeah, so he didn't declare that in the actual inquiry, and there's obviously differences of opinion about whether he should or shouldn't have done that. I've spoken to Luke several times. For him, it was definitely an oversight, but not something that he was trying to hide. There was a little bit of the industry not playing the ball, playing the man, and trying to discredit a witness rather than address the broader issue that I've talked about here, which is whether these inducements that are currently legal are still predatory and maybe something that the Commonwealth needs to address. Although I should also add, this also falls under the jurisdiction of states and territories. So even as we talk about it as simply as just dealing with inducements, it's actually quite a complex issue.
Well, after these Senate hearings, though, Claire, that is really when things began to shift, right? Because that's when the opposition and its communications spokeswoman, Sarah Henderson, withdrew any form of support. And the Prime Minister was really at that point left with no friends in the Parliament when it came to this bill. Just tell me about that.
Yeah, so off the back of that Senate inquiry, as you said, we saw Sarah Henderson come out and at least put a sort of flag in the ground saying, as it currently stands, we don't support this bill. And I think that that has, you know, I don't think Labor expected the whole thing to be rubber stamped, but it's made it a lot more complicated. I think that's part of the reason why it became a topic of discussion in a meeting between the Prime Minister and opposition leader Angus Taylor yesterday. They were meeting to talk about a range of different bills, but gambling kind of became a big focus of that because of how messy this process has ended up becoming.
So, Claire, let's now look at what the government is willing to do to get this legislation through the Parliament. Just tell me, though, first of all, why was the Prime Minister so reluctant to make any changes in the first place? Why do you think that is?
I've seen it described by, I think it was my colleague Mel Clark, as there being a generous way and a less generous way to interpret the Prime Minister's position. The generous way is he is trying to balance a lot of competing interests, for better or for worse, free-to-air media companies who are pretty integral still to our democracy, as well as just the existence of the sporting codes, was all dependent on advertising, of which gambling revenue is clearly a major factor. So there is a desire to sort of address the harm without completely decimating those sectors. There's a secondary consideration, which is that, of course, gambling remains legal in Australia. The Prime Minister frequently talks about it's still okay to have a punt.
And I'm not against someone having a punt on a Saturday. What I'm against is problem gambling.
He doesn't want to be seen to be launching some big culture war against the industry. We've already seen Pauline Hanson, the One Nation leader, gravitate that way. I had a Labor source tell me last week that the last thing they want is Pauline Hanson running around the suburbs saying that, you know, this is just the latest in a line of sort of nanny state measures, be it, you know, forcing someone to log in to watch porn or restricting gambling, that they don't want that message pervasive in the community. So there's sort of the political and economic considerations. The less generous interpretation is, of course, that the gambling companies, the sporting codes in particular, even the media companies, are very powerful lobbyists. They obviously want to maintain their business model. And there is certainly a belief that's been prosecuted by the likes of the Green spokeswoman on this issue, Senator Sarah Hanson-Young, that the Prime Minister has been quite lenient toward that lobby. The government would completely reject that and say that they've got a balance here. But I think on an issue like this, you are always going to have people that want things to go further and faster, and for various reasons, the Prime Minister has really resisted that for literally years.
Okay, well, Claire, why don't you just remind us what is on the table at the moment and what could be amended, do we know?
Yeah, so the bill broadly tackles advertising and specifically looks at where children are most likely to be exposed to advertising. So there are extra limits on television, particularly limiting it to 3 per hour between 6 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. None in live sport, like during the actual play. There is still potential for that sort of late Friday night footy at the end of the game for there to be gambling advertisements, which is actually, I think, one of the things the government might move on. Mm. When it comes to radio, there's only restrictions in what's known as the school pickup drop-off time. And then there's online, and that's where it gets really complicated. Mm. So online is going to have to require everyone to be logged in to be able to see gambling ads. And the age verification is going to require that anyone under 18 not be showing gambling ads. Mm. And then any adult user should be given the opportunity to completely opt out of ads. That is an issue that some of the gambling advocates have really honed in on. They want to switch that entirely to an opt-in. That is a red line I do not think that the government are going to move on. Across those three sort of areas of advertisement, I expect there'll be the biggest push on the online situation in the current bill, but that's where the government will hold the line. Mm-hmm. I think they will move on the TV, and I think they will have to move at this stage on inducements, which at its present stage aren't addressed in the bill at all.
Okay, so they'll have to actually, what, redraft the bill to bring in some restrictions on inducements. Do we have any idea at this point what that might be?
Well, as I said earlier, it's really complicated because of so much of this falls between state and territory jurisdiction and the Commonwealth. I expect that it would be very difficult to just slot inducements into this bill. More than likely, there's probably just going to have to be some kind of commitment to working with states and territories on this issue, or working with states and territories to basically give up control of that issue to the Commonwealth, which, as anyone knows on any issue, that's always a lot easier said than done.
Well, the Prime Minister on Monday, he told his party room that he is confident of getting the bill through the Parliament with the opposition's support. But the Greens Senator, Sarah Hanson-Young, she says if he can't, they'll do it instead.
And I've said to the government, if you are not prepared to do what's needed here, we'll take this out of your hands and we'll do it in the Senate ourselves. Because the majority of senators know that what the government has put on the table is not good enough.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is where the brinkmanship really comes to the fore, because you've got a situation where the majority of the Senate, being the Coalition, the Greens and the crossbench, do want to change and strengthen this bill. So when Sarah Hanson-Young says we'll do it ourselves, she means creating a kind of agreement between all of those parties and groups to do something to this legislation, the issue being that the government obviously could just withdraw the bill entirely and so they'd have nothing there to amend. I think that's pretty unlikely at this stage. What's more likely is that the Prime Minister, after meeting with Angus Taylor yesterday, will have probably set out some limits. That's probably where Angus maybe falls. This isn't a high priority issue for him. I'm not saying that it's not important to him, but in the scheme of things, I think he will take that to Shadow Cabinet. I think we will see movement on those areas I mentioned because of the combination of the internal Labor pressure and the external pressure. But whether the Prime Minister will get all of that done and get passed in this next 2 weeks is still a bit unclear. But even more than that, I think whatever compromise position is landed on, because this issue has come to the fore, it's not going to be one that really goes away for the government. Now, Albo and others rely on the fact that a lot of polling tells us that this isn't a number one vote swinging issue. It's something that people really care about, but going one way or the other isn't necessarily going to change their vote at the ballot box. However, if these measures are deemed to be not strong enough, I think for the next 18 months, 2 years of this government, we are going to have a situation where every time there is an example of maybe a death that's linked to someone's gambling addiction, or there's a financial advisor who steals all their clients' money to go off and gamble with it, that pressure is really going to quickly focus on the government and whether its restrictions have gone far enough.
So what about Luke Bateman and people like him? Do they think that these sort of changes can really stop the next generation of Australians going down the same path?
What Luke and others have talked about is when you're in that grey zone between starting to acknowledge that you might have a bit of a problem, that constant contact, it can be as simple as, hey, if your horse gets second, we'll still pay you out as if it won. You know, a text message like that the day before a race. Those sorts of things, I think, they believe would make a difference to the next generation if they weren't submitted to that kind of contact, particularly when they're in that moment of wanting to step away from gambling.
Claire Armstrong is the ABC's chief digital correspondent based in Canberra. This episode was produced by Ilaria Brophy and Louise Mylan. Audio production by Anna John. Our supervising producer is Sydney Peat. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.